It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 266. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. It's time to celebrate the career of BYU running back Jamal Williams. And what better way to do that than to interview his mom, Nicole Williams? She talks to us about his career and his experience at BYU. Matt and I then talk about our favorite Jamal games and predict his NFL draft slot. Also on the show, we talk Jemmer, hoops, and the NFL playoffs. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to Nicole Williams talk about her son Jamal right now. Welcoming to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, a very special guest. It's Nicole Williams, the mother of all everything BYU running back Jamal Williams. Nicole, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome. Hello, everybody.
Well, we wanted to have an episode where we talk about Jamal, and I thought, well, who better to talk about Jamal than his own mom, right? I mean, who else could do as good of a job as you? So I wanted to start out with, and I know this story has probably been, you've told it a thousand times since he came to school, but it's now several years ago. I want you to just briefly tell us, like, the process of how Jamal Williams ended up, without any initial connections to BYU, how he ended up at BYU and what that recruiting process was like as his mom, as you watched him go through that and end up coming and enrolling at school in Provo.
You know, it's really funny. I had someone do his highlight tape for high school, and then a friend, and he was also a fan of Jamal's for in high school. You know, he said, I have this all the emails for all of the colleges and coaches and everything. He said, would you mind if I sent Jamal's highlight huddle tape out? And I was like, no, I don't mind, no problem. Because he had been getting some offers and everything. And so he sent that tape out, and BYU was on in that email. And the very next day, Coach Weber, who I still love him to death and talk to him all the time, the next day, Coach Weber was at Jamal's high school. And he said, you know, I'm Coach Weber from BYU, and we want you. And Jamal was like, BYU? He had never heard of BYU. And, you know, I got to thinking about it, and I was like, Jamal, I was like, I went to BYU. I ran at BYU when I was at UCLA. They had the national championships for track and field at BYU. And I told him, I said, the only thing I remember was we stayed in the dorms. They didn't have TVs. The only thing for us to do was go to the mall. You couldn't wear shorts. So, you know, I'm thinking about all these things that, you know, you're at the national championships and you have all these, you know, limitations and things you can do. And so then come to find out, one of his high school coaches actually went and played at BYU, which was Tony Crutchfield. So from there, it just, everything just flourished from that point on.
So, you know, when Jamal came to school, he was still 17, right? He wasn't 18 when he walked on campus.
He wasn't 18 until the next year.
Yeah. And I remember he came on and everyone was like, he's young. And I remember thinking, well, I bet you he doesn't play much. I mean, he's 17. He'll come in. And obviously his freshman year was a lot better than I think most of us anticipated. What was that first year like for him and for you as his mom, as he's going to school in a pretty unfamiliar place, a different culture for sure? What was that like for you as his mom and for him that first year as he got kind of acclimated to college football, but also to BYU and Provo?
Well, I mean, I can remember taking him to the dorm, dropping him off, and I think I must have cried. I sat in the back seat. And I must have cried all the way from Provo to probably Cedar City. And I think my daughter, my mom, my dad, and my brother, they were just like, give her a pillow and put over her head or something. I mean, it was just, you know, it was like my baby is gone. But after that, you know, we was just excited because I really thought he was going to redshirt. And, you know, we was just, every game we would go to, we was like, oh, we hope they get up by 21 points so Jamal can get in and play. So, you know, it was like that first game against Washington, I remember it. I mean, he was on special teams. It was like, okay. And then the game against Utah, I mean, I remember that was his very first collegiate touchdown. And so, you know, it's so many memories. And after that, I mean, the coaches were great. They kept in contact with me. And I'm a very hands-on type of person, as you probably know. So, you know, I had everybody's number, and I'm like, what, you know, how's he doing? I'm calling his professors, and, you know, like, how's he doing in class? And so I'm pretty much hands-on with my kids, and I, you know, just want to make sure that they have everything possible that they need to succeed and whatever I can help them with or whatever. But after the first couple of months, and, you know, his first roommate was Dylan Colley, and they got along great. I mean, when Dylan left to go on his mission, it was kind of, you know, he was kind of bummed out, but they still keep in touch and everything. So he's established so many relationships and friendships that just go over and beyond just football, just them being friends, even though we're not part of the LDS, and, you know, but we're still Christian. So it's not that much difference. I mean, Jamal basically tells me I'm really a Mormon, but I'm not a Mormon. So he's like, so he tells me I'm Mormon, but I'm not Mormon. So well, I just laugh. So
well, you just point out something I think that people love. Obviously, he is. My brother and I talked about this recently on the podcast that we think he's BYU, the best running back BYU's had in our lifetimes watching. So, I mean, obviously his talent is undeniable. He's had such a great career. But one of the things that marks him as a player is that just joy he has while playing. And that's been true. Freshman year, maybe he was a little bit more reserved as a freshman than maybe he would be later on. But is that just something that he's always had? Is that just part of his big personality, is to have fun no matter what he's doing? Is that something that's blossomed as a young adult, or you know, as his mom? Is that just some part of Jamal as he's been since he was a kid?
You know, no, it blossomed as he developed and became a young man. Jamal just loves the game of football. So, believe it or not, Jamal never went to any dances. Jamal didn't even dance until he got to BYU. So, a lot of things came out because that was the way that he can express himself while he was at BYU, as far as being able to adapt to the culture and, you know, doing things that he likes to do while he was there. He started roller skating and bowling and dancing. So it actually made him look at himself and be like, hey, I can make the best of this by doing things that I like to do and still be a part of the culture and be able to succeed and be successful and actually be an example to other young men who are not of the LDS religion, that they can still go and enjoy the BYU culture. I mean, BYU is a very distinguished school. So you can say BYU, I'm at work, I can be on a call, and I can go to someone's house and they see BYU. And actually, I just started at a new station, and one of the other females, we were just talking, and it comes to find out she's Paula CK's first cousin. Her dad and Paula CK's dad are brothers. And I'm like, what? And we work together. So I've gone everywhere, and people, they're like, you Jamal's mom? And, you know, they take pictures. And like I said, I've been on calls, and, you know, I'm at work, and it's crazy. I mean, I don't know. People in California, you know, they say it's SC, but I think BYU is across the United States, the country, basically, because me and my mom went on a cruise for Mother's Day, and we was in oh my God, where was Costa Maya? And they had BYU little football thing. I mean, out of all the places. So, you know, it's like, I mean, I love it because of the unity. Regardless, you can go anywhere and you just say BYU and everybody embrace you like, you know, like they've known you forever. And that's something, I went to UCLA, and that's something that I did not experience when I was at UCLA.
Yeah, sure. And you were a heck of an athlete yourself, so obviously you were in part of that culture. But one of the things that, you know, has kind of stuck out to me about Jamal is how tough he is when he gets hit and gets a lot of yards after he gets hit. Is that toughness? Is that something that, you know, you kind of, you know, put into him as his mother, as you raised him? Is that something that he grew into? I know you said he loved football and has loved football for a long time. Is that just something he learned playing football, or is that like his personality? Is that something that developed even more after he came to BYU?
Well, Jamal used to play offense and defense. Jamal played linebacker, and I actually liked him playing linebacker because I like him doing the hitting instead of getting hit. So, you know, I was very animated in the stands. So, you know, when he was playing linebacker, I'm like, knock him out. So, and it's funny because he doesn't turn that off when he's playing running back. So he's running the ball, but he's still running the ball as if he's playing linebacker. And see, that's something that wide receivers and a lot of running backs, if they, you know, he's used to getting hit. So when he's running the ball, he knows he can hit just as hard as, you know, as he was if he was playing linebacker. So that was a lot of the schools were recruiting him as linebacker, not as running back. So one time in high school, he actually got flagged. He was running a ball, and they gave him a flag for hitting the linebacker too hard. Kind of sort of like at the bowl game when one of the plays, I think someone actually got hurt, the safety or something. But, I mean, because Jamal just put that shoulder down and be like, okay, well, come with it, and we'll see who's going to end up on the ground. So, but and a lot of running backs don't have that mentality. But sometimes my dad, he's in the stands like, can you just tell Jamal when he get hit, just go down. Just, you know, my dad's like, just go down. And Jamal was like, Papa, I can't do that. I can't just go down. I have to win the battle. So,
well, and he's
his mentality.
He's certainly won more battles than he lost in the course of his career. And you referenced the bowl game. I now have that as my screensaver, him kind of pointing at the safety, telling him, come and get some. And the safety tried, but didn't fare so well.
That safety is from California. And my daughter, oh, my God, she was like, Mom, I know that guy. He's from California. He went to Diamond Bar. So everybody was just roasting that guy. It was like, man, Jamal called you out. And
it was pretty fun. So what do you, as his mom, obviously I know I've heard you in other videos talk about how proud you are of him as a person and how hard he's worked as a football player. What are you going to, as his mom, take away from his experience at BYU? What sticks out to you as you know, it could be on or off the field. What to you is kind of the most important thing that he gained as a football player and as a person while attending BYU?
Well, my number one thing is he's a BYU alumni. So he graduated, and that was something. I told him I didn't care about any records. I didn't care about anything but that diploma. So now I have my diploma on the wall. He has his, so we just have to wait on my daughter. But that was my number one goal, is whatever you do, we're going to graduate and you're going to be a college graduate. So, and you know, everyone at BYU, they stress that to their athletes, graduate, the counselors, everyone. I mean, they want the they want their athletes to be all-around people, great men, great fathers, great husbands. So, you know, and I don't think no one else I have seen that demonstrated that type of atmosphere for the athletes, which is what they definitely need. Because, you know, you see so much going, so much happening, and our boys, men, they are such great people off the field also. And that's, I'm so happy that he got to experience that.
Yeah, that's great, and we'll be proud as BYU fans to count him as an alum for sure. Looking forward, going forward, obviously he's got a chance, and a lot of scouts that I've read reports are extremely high on him playing at the next level. What are the next few months like for Jamal as he prepares for that, and for you as his mom as you look at your son who's on the cusp of playing on Sundays?
You know, it for him, Jamal is, like I said, all Jamal thinks about is football, football, football. So he's training right now in Arizona. And, I mean, he says he's at work. So he's putting in work right now. He's running. I mean, I think he's going to make some heads turn at the combine. Because people don't know, Jamal's ran track since he was 8 years old. So I've ran track. He actually ran one season at BYU. It was just kind of hard because you still have to lift weight. So you got to go out there and run. So he did run track at BYU for one season. But Jamal is a sprinter. So I don't know. You know, I kind of get offended, but Jamal's like, Mom, don't worry about it. Because, you know, they're saying, oh, he might run a 4.6. Well, I can run a 4.6. So I know Jamal runs faster than a 4.6. So, you know, I can't wait. I won't disclose everything, but he's been working really, really hard. And, I mean, his dream has been to play on Sundays in the NFL, and that's what he's working for. So it's been fun. You know, he picked his agent, which, you know, it's just a dream. Who thought that, you know, he would have Lee Steinberg show me the money, man?
I mean,
he's wonderful. And, you know, he's been through his ups and downs, and he's rolled, you know, came. And it's good because you can talk to people who have had bumpy roads, and, you know, everything is not a cherry on top. But they show you that you can, when you fall, you can always get back up, and you always learn from your mistakes. And when you learn from your mistakes, it makes you a better person. So if you never make mistakes, then that means you've never tried to do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, Nicole, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Really have enjoyed following you on Twitter the last few years, and also, of course, enjoyed watching your son. As I said before, I think he's probably the best running back that we've ever had at BYU, or certainly among the top two or three that we've ever had. And we'll miss him, but wish him the best, and wish you and your family the best. You know, and hope that we do occasionally still see you guys around at games and that kind of thing, and are still part of the BYU family. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me and working around my schedule. You guys are great, so I really appreciate it.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, how sad are you going to be when the Super Bowl ends and there's no more football for months and months?
Well, it's going to take me a few minutes before that sadness sets in, because I'll be busy running around the house celebrating in my Tom Brady jersey.
I'll be celebrating in my custom Kyle Van Noy jersey.
But I'd say that by the next morning, yeah, I'll be a little melancholy.
So I was watching the NFC divisional game between the Cowboys and the Packers. All right.
Oh, the Packers game.
The Packers game, yes. Yes, and I'm watching with my 10-year-old daughter, and we were just both like, we just kept doing these, oh my gosh, that just happened, oh my gosh. And that catch, was it Richard Rodgers that made that amazing catch on the sidelines that set up the game-winning field goal?
An amazing catch.
Like, in real time, I'm like, oh, well, he's not even close to being in. He was totally out, you know? And then when the ref came in and said he was in, I'm like, well, this is getting overruled. I mean, he was clearly, his knee was down, you know? No.
Yeah.
No, actually, his knee was not down.
Turns out he was very much in bounds.
And that ref made a spectacular call on a bang-bang play, which looks really easy to call in slow motion, which is very difficult to call in real time. And then Jason Garrett, like, you know, my wife said this the other day. I've heard other people say it. Does icing the kicker, do you think it means anything to somebody like Mason Crosby?
Nope. It is a waste of your timeout.
And quite frankly, aren't you better off maybe faking calling the timeout? Isn't that the unexpected thing?
He doesn't fake. He pretends to fake. No. No. He thinks about...
He thinks about faking.
Faking. I don't know where I am.
I don't know where I am. I've got a tattoo of Roy Orbison on my butt.
I don't even know what to do with that little tidbit. But I think that at the NFL level, most of these guys, you're beyond icing.
Yeah,
we've moved on, folks.
I mean, I guess the counter argument is, what does it hurt? There's 3 seconds left. If he kicks the field goal, saving your timeouts for, you know, what? Your timeout doesn't go with you in overtime. So,
but you know, but nobody tries to ice anybody else.
You don't ice the quarterback as they're about to throw the Hail Mary. You don't call a timeout right before he hikes it.
Nope, people don't do that. I mean, sometimes people call a timeout out of somebody's, you know, inside the 10 and about to, or going for two to score it, and they come out, you get a look at what their formation is and you call a timeout to try and make an adjustment to the defense, even though, you know, or maybe you saw a matchup that was bad and so you're like, well, we definitely don't want that, so you call your timeout. But nobody tries to ice the quarterback.
Let's ice the free safety.
I don't know that it even really matters at any level. Like, what does it really do?
Gives them more time, because this is what the announcers always say, more time to think about it. Okay, Matt, before I'm going to get to something else here in a second, but how awesome was that game? Forget about Jason Garrett's timeout. We've had some awesome football the last few weeks. This January
the last couple
has
weeks
been
have been pretty awesome.
I mean, we had the Rose Bowl. We had the national championship game. We've had some excellent NFL playoff games and several duds, too, that weren't that interesting, though, as a Patriots fan. This was the most annoying thing, was those stupid announcers. So who was it calling the Patriots game? Nance and Phil Simms, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots are winning at halftime against the Texans 17-14. Everything went Houston's way in the first half except for the kickoff return for a touchdown by the Patriots. Everything. They got turnovers. Their defense played great. And their offense didn't have to do very much. And they were still down 4 points. If you had thought Phil Simms and Jim Nance, you would have thought the Texans were up by 2 touchdowns. Oh, well, this is bad for the Patriots. They're up by 4 points. And they're still going to win by more than 2 touchdowns, which is exactly what happened. I was just waiting for somebody, not even the halftime crew said that. They were all just like, wow, the Texans, they're playing great. And this is what I have to say. Can we just retire Phil Simms and Troy Aikman already? Can we just be done with them? They don't say anything interesting. Neither of them. They don't say anything interesting. Like, I like Aikman better than Phil Simms, but Phil Simms is terrible. He's just terrible. Like, he doesn't say anything. Wow, that was a really good play. Really, Phil? That's all you got? It's a really good play?
We all saw it, Phil.
35-yard completion, that's a good play. Oh, that could come back to haunt them after a turnover. Really? That could come back to haunt them? A turnover? Thanks, Captain Obvious. Go back and sell hotels.com.
Captain Obvious.
Him. I shouldn't be as hard on Aikman. Aikman sometimes says things that are interesting. But with all the good football announcers that are out there today, you know, I sit there and go, well, there's got to be better, right? There's got to be better than Phil Simms.
Yeah, but they got to pick who they send to what games, you know. I mean, the Patriots game couldn't even attract Goodell, much less the varsity announcing squad.
Goodell's not welcome in Foxborough,
and he's still not coming. He's not going to come this weekend either.
He can't land. He can't even land in Boston without him getting mobbed. I'm just saying. So Matt,
what's he going to do? What's he going to do if they go to the Super Bowl? He has to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, but it's not.
It's not in Foxborough.
Who's going to award the trophy?
Wait a second. Where is the Super Bowl this year?
Houston.
Houston. That's right. That's right. The Texans yep. really need to get there so they could have a home game. Yeah, right. Whoever they've been playing would have had more fans at the stadium. Matt, final four, who you got? Patriots, okay. Yep. We're picking the Patriots.
Yes.
Who do you like between Atlanta and Green Bay?
Green Bay.
I can't pick against Rodgers right now. He is on a different freaking planet.
I said it last week, and I'll say it again. I believe the man practices the dark arts.
He knows things.
He knows things that the rest of us do not know. My favorite is they make that completion to keep him alive there at the end.
Yes.
And reporter after the game asks him, "So is that the greatest throw you've ever made?" And he says, "No, it's just a throw we practice all the time." like we just kind of expect it to be there. I mean, because really, I mean, yeah, I mean, the ball was placed right where it needed to be, and where only his guy could get it, and where he'd barely, you know, where he'd barely catch it and be able to, but close enough that he was able to keep himself in bounds. And the ball was very well placed, and it was you know, a scramble play kind of designed that way. And you know, and they completed it. I mean, but from a technical standpoint, I mean, it was an excellent play. If you just look at the play on its face, it's not the greatest play that Aaron Rodgers has ever made in his lifetime. I mean, in the context and the timing of it, yeah, sure. I mean, that's a pretty big play. But if you just look at the mechanics of it, it's not as dramatic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's a good throw. It's a good throw.
It's amazing to me, Matt. Like I was watching the national champ. The New Year's Day bowl games with a New Year's Eve, sorry, the semis with a friend. And we were talking about the difference between college and the pros for a quarterback is in college, your windows are pretty big. You often have wide receivers pretty open. And in the pros, unless there's a blown coverage, somebody falls down or something, very rarely is your receiver wide open. So you have this tiny window to fit it in. And as I watched that, I was like, you know, Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, you know, pick any of the best quarterbacks over the last decade. That is what separates them, is that Aaron Rodgers makes that kind of throw 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a game, depending on how on he is, right? And the crazy part out is, I think Dak Prescott's for real. I mean, he drove down and got them back in the game. Like, I think this guy's legit. Are you on the Dak Prescott train, or you just hate the Cowboys so much you can't see it?
No, I'm liking what I see out of Prescott.
I think he may be.
I mean, it is too bad, but
yeah. That he plays for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
yeah. It is too bad. It is too bad. Don't worry, Tony Romo will. Might be the quarterback for the Houston Texans next year. If you're Romo, where do you go?
The Jets. The New York Jets.
You go to the Texans, right? Great defense. I don't know that you have any elite wide receivers. Denver? Demaryius Thomas? But they've got a couple of young quarterbacks that might... Those young quarterbacks aren't any good. Simeon and the other guy aren't any good. People no. always think that, oh, well, this young guy, he's okay. You're better off rolling the dice with Romo for a year than you are trying to, quote-unquote, develop a quarterback. When was the last time a quarterback developed? I'm serious. That they weren't good at the beginning and became great. I don't know. I mean, Manning was pretty rough his first year, but he was great in
pretty
his
terrible.
Second year.
Right? Andrew Luck was pretty bad his first year.
No, he had good stats. The team was just terrible. He was good. But I'm not sure he's a great, though. But probably about 25 teams would be happy to swap their quarterback for Andrew Luck.
See, that's the thing, right? It's a quarterback-driven league, and we've been going through this golden age of quarterbacks, but this isn't going to last forever, my friend.
No. Aaron Rodgers, though, he just belongs on the list at... I know a lot of people think he's a jerk, whatever, and he may be in real life be a jerk. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Don't care.
It has no impact on my life at all.
Not particularly relevant to me if he's mean to his brother who was on The Bachelorette. Oddly enough, I do not care about that.
Unless he's out doing like criminal things that actually hurt other people, I really could care less.
Yeah, I could care less.
He could be a total tool.
Yes. So Matt, let's jump into a abbreviated CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the... I abbreviated it.
Oh. I was kind of wondering, like, did he just cut out? Crap.
I abbreviated. You wanted it abbreviated.
That's good. That's good. So, Matt, let's start off with men's volleyball. After that loss against Loyola Chicago, they bounced back to beat McKendree twice and Concordia Irvine once, straight sets, all three matches. So 9 sets won, not even particularly close. They've got coming up this weekend. They're at California Sun. What is that again? We looked at that last year. I can't remember who they are.
CSUN. Northridge?
No, is it?
California State University Northridge.
Oh, look at you knowing stuff. Yeah, there it is. They've got number 14, Cal State University Northridge, coming up in Northridge, California at the Matadome, Matt.
It's the Matadome.
The Matadome. So they got that coming up. Well, Matt.
I was really, really flattered when they named that arena after me.
Yeah, it was a big
honor. I did not see that coming.
No. None of us saw it coming. Why the heck would they name it an arena after you?
It's a great honor.
Volleyball prodigy, Matt Mangum.
Great honor. Played a little bit of volleyball in high school, Jim.
Yeah, I hear you were quite something.
I was pretty enthusiastic.
So, Matt, when I say the name Mark Sanchez, what does that mean to you?
Mediocrity.
Mediocrity.
Stands for mediocrity.
Well, don't shoot me, but it's a different Mark Sanchez. In the New York Post, yes, the New York Post. So, Mark
also conjures up the word mediocrity.
Yeah. Mark W. Sanchez writes about Jimmer Fredette becoming a dominant god in China, Matt. I'm pretty sure that this is where Jimmer Fredette is meant to be. And I don't mean that on some spiritual level. I just mean what he's supposed to be doing is filling up buckets. What's that?
I've prayed about this, Jimmer, and I think you need to go to China.
Can we leave that in? We're leaving it in.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know, look what's happened, you know?
Yes. Yeah. He has become something else. You know what I mean? Like, he won the 3-point shooting contest. He and Stephon Marbury apparently, are buddies. It's amazing to me what's happening now. And his Twitter account was hacked. So
it's not all roses. It's not all coming up roses for Jimmer. Hey, it's. Maybe get a password that doesn't have your name in it, you know.
So
I don't know how people hack these accounts, but
I don't know how they do it either. Is this what's the best way for me to put it? Is this a fitting end for if he ends up doing this for 5, 6, 7, 10 years? Is that okay that he never made it as an NBA star?
Yeah, I think so. But you know what was interesting to me? And we didn't talk about this before. But so there's this new there was this Twitter account that was doing basketball highlights set to My Heart Will Go On.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen this.
Have you seen the one of these that started as
the BYU Titanic? Yeah.
Oh.
So they're doing just BYU highlights. And they have one that is Jimmer's shot from like the rafters against Florida in the tournament.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember that.
And so I was watching it, and after the first time you watch it and you laugh because you're like, okay, that's – wow, this gag is still funny. This Celine Dion thing is still – that's still funny. So you laugh, and then it loops back around, and you watch him take that shot again. I mean, he was out in the middle of nowhere, and when he sank that shot, the crowd jumps up. Everybody's going crazy. They close in on Jimmer. He looks like he's ready to kill somebody. And his neck, I mean, his neck looks big. I mean, he looks mean and intense and kind of thick. but he doesn't look like that anymore. Did he lose his edge? Like, did he lose some of his edge at some point? I don't know.
Who, Jimmer?
Yeah, but that's not been a problem for him in China, apparently. But he just looks so mean. He looks so mean. It was awesome.
He did look mean. I don't know if he lost his edge. I just think it's hard to keep that up if you're sitting on the bench.
Right. You know what I mean? Just don't get the intensity, right?
Yeah, and you're clearly not a part of what that team is planning to do, you know?
So I think what we're saying is, you know, Jimmer's not a come off the bench guy. You know, there's people that can make that transition and become, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh man off the bench and come in and contribute and make a career out of that at the professional level. But he, you know, he needs to be out on the floor. He needs to get into the rhythm of the game. He needs to be in control on some level to really get into his zone.
I think with
then this is the right place.
With the right NBA team, I think he could have been, and I've said this before, like Vinnie Johnson from those 90s Pistons team, where he comes in and they just give him the ball for the next 8 minutes and he just shoots every time down the court or runs the offense, right? Like the microwave, as they called Johnson, you know, that he could come in and do that. Nobody tried that with him. And I think it could have worked, but in the end, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's 27 years old. He's got a little bit of a window here where I think the NBA is still a potential possibility, but within a couple of years, nobody's going to give a 31-year-old Jimmer Fredette the time of day in the NBA if he hasn't come back and already established himself, right? I mean,
right.
There's the new Jimmers, the new people coming about. I just love it that he's able to do this, which he loves to do, and we get to watch Jimmer highlights again. And anytime somebody shows up Stephon Marbury, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
I don't object to that. Well, Matt, today we're going to sing the praises of, dare we say it, the best running back in BYU history.
Wow, so we're ready to go there.
Well, we'll go there in a minute. We'll go there in a minute. But, Matt, let's talk a little bit about Jamal Williams, okay? So if for the listeners who've been listening, of course, you already heard from his mom, Nicole Williams, which I think was a really fun interview. It was wonderful talking to her. She is an absolute riot. It was great talking to her. She was coming back from recertifying on night shooting because she's a county sheriff, I believe. So, you know, she's got that too. Don't mess with her. It is, as I think back on his career, Matt, you know, there is a lot of what if, right? And I say that only because of the injuries. So there is some what if in there. But mostly, right, I look back and I say, what a career. In 2016 I think you can say this very objectively because it was true on yards per carry, touchdowns, and total yards. It was his best year. And we got to see one of the best running backs in BYU history at his prime. And his run at the end of the year was fantastic. Matt, what for you sets him apart? What made him better than dozens of other BYU running backs who come in who've got skill? And what's the difference between him and one of those guys?
Well, the big thing for me is numbers.
Yeah.
You know, you go through and you look at what he did, you know, on paper compared to the people who came before him, and it just kind of blows your mind. You know, you just run through just the list of records at BYU, and his name pops up again and again. You know, one of the things that just kind of jumps off the page for me is you look and you say, this is a guy who, if you look at, like, most rushes, like, he doesn't have the most rushes in a game, the most in a season, the most in a career. You know, he didn't get the ball as much as Harvey Unga did, but he's rushed for more yards in a game and more yards in a career than anybody else. I mean, it's just his way to continue plays and the explosive plays. It's unlike most of what we've seen in Provo.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you think if he had stayed healthy, I mean, yards does he end up with? Right? Like, imagine 2014 was the same as 2013. So give him another 700 yards, then he finishes his career with, 4,600 yards. Like, I don't know if another, if he had, I'm not saying his record's unbreakable as it is, at which is unfortunate. They really should have given him one more carry so he could have gotten over 4,000. But, I guess he would have needed more carries. He's 100 short. But you look at that.
Know, depending on where they gave him the ball, right?
That's right. But you look at that and you say, I'm not saying it's unbreakable because it's probably not unbreakable, but he was the main featured back for 2.5 seasons. And it would have been 3 had he stayed healthy in 2014. Chances of us getting another guy that's the main guy for 3 years, it's hard. It just doesn't happen very often. I mean, obviously, Unga had a good run, and Jamal Willis had a good run. But you look, more careers are more like Luke Staley's than they are like Jamal Williams, where you have that one really good year, and then you maybe that's the only year you're the featured back.
Right.
But I think what set him apart, Matt, was speed was there, but I think we've had other guys that were as speedy as him or close. To me, it was vision, especially this year. He found holes and moved to the hole and then hit them, right? He doesn't dance, but he makes that one cut and go, and he would find the hole and he would take it. And with that acceleration, was just incredible.
He's just so talented.
Did they use him enough in the passing game? Looking at his career stats, he didn't catch the ball a lot.
No, and I think, if you look at the time, if you look over his time and the way the offense worked, there wasn't a lot of really good opportunity for it.
Yeah.
They weren't prepared to do that, I don't think, very well.
I mean, Unga caught 102 passes. He had a year, his 2007... when you talk about greatest running backs of all time, I think if you're making the case for Unga, what you'll say is, okay, maybe he wasn't, it's not a maybe, he wasn't as good of a rusher as Jamal Williams. But the argument would be, but he also had 1,000 yards plus receiving and 9 receiving touchdowns. Matt, do you buy that argument? Is that something that's legit to say, well, yeah, Jamal was better as a rusher, but we're not, we got to count total contribution here, not just handoffs.
Well, when you get into that total contribution conversation, that goes to speaking about a lot of different pieces of the offense and the way the passing game worked. I think that if the offensive coordinator decides to get a running back, and I don't want to get too deep into this because I'm not making a comment on Harvey Unga here, but if the offensive coordinator decides to work the running back more into the passing game, get him ball in space or whatever, that's one thing. Sometimes a running back might get more of those just because nobody else is getting open and he's the check down, right? And so because those opportunities don't exist across the board, it's hard to evaluate it. Now the flip side of that is you could say, well, the coaches saw that Harvey Unga could be really effective in the passing game and decided to get him involved. And maybe the coaches just didn't see that with Jamal, but I just don't believe that was the issue. I feel like it has more to do with the function of the way the offense was run than Jamal Williams' particular set of skills, because I think that you could have done some things with him, getting him the ball out in space, or using him as a check down. There are some games individually where you run through and you see that he was. And he was used that way, like in 2012 against Notre Dame. He's got 7 receptions. Rambling.
You're rambling a little bit, but your point's good, which is I think it's a function of the offense. If you look at BYU running backs over history, almost all of the running backs in that top 10 had way more catches than Jamal did. And I don't think that has to do with he has stone hands or anything. I think it has to do with they made decision not to use him in that way. I mean, you look at Luke Staley, he had almost 1,000 yards receiving and 30-plus catches, even though when he wasn't the featured back, right? And Jamal was the featured back for, not his freshman year, but every other year that he played, he was the guy. And You know, and this year, I think, quite frankly, it was, well, we're going to hand him the ball 25 times a game. We probably don't want him catching the ball 6 times a game, too, right? It probably isn't right. practical to keep him healthy. And also, you know, keep in mind he wasn't healthy all this year either. So, Matt, looking at his best games, do you have what you think is his best game?
Well, the one that jumps out at me, and it, maybe it's recency bias. Well, there's two that jump out at me, but you know, I'm going to stick with this one because it's more recent. I think the results are a little bit more dramatic. The Toledo game this year. I mean, he was a workhorse. You know, 30 carries, and here's another circumstance where you were talking about. You know, they don't throw him the ball a single time because they handed it to him 30 times, and he averaged 9.5 yards a carry for 5 touchdowns, which is a tie for most touchdowns in a game in BYU history. That, I mean, that's insane. That's insane. You know, and then to go and to win that game in a shootout type score, 55-53, and but your workhorse was really your running back? I mean, who wins a game like that? Who wins a game like that but Jamal Williams, who put that team on his back?
Well, and you look at what he did against Michigan State this year, what he did against West Virginia, what he did against Wyoming in the bowl game. You know, he was at his best this year. I mean, I already thought coming in this season he was one of the 3 or 4 best running backs in BYU history. But what makes, I mean, this run that he had towards the end, obviously marred a little bit by injury and him missing a few games, but watching him against against Wyoming, it was like the Wyoming players just didn't belong on the field with him, right? Like, he's knocking that safety down like he's nobody. I mean... It was, and Toledo the same way. Toledo wasn't a terrible team. There was a decent team, not a great defense, but it's not as if, you know, we're talking about Southern Utah, his stats against Southern Utah, right? I mean, and he did this in a game against Toledo that was close, right? It was every carry he had there in the second half was vital to their winning.
Right. It wasn't that we were chewing up clock necessarily, right?
Right. Right.
We had to score 55 points to win that game.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously his game against Houston in 2014, 2013, he had some spectacular games. The Nevada game, Texas, where he gets overshadowed a little bit because of how good Taysom was that day.
Really, though, the 2013 Texas game, I mean, that's a showcase game for him as well. But, you know, the hurdle picks of Taysom, which are great, great plays. Obviously, you don't take anything away from Taysom Hill on that. But, geez.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what a performance.
So Gary Payne, we'll go to the tweet bag here, Matt.
Tweet bag.
I thought you were going to change the tune to that this week.
Oh, I was. I was going to do it like in a different key.
Mm.
Tweet bag.
Stick with the original. Original's right. Always better. He asked, did you confirm that Jamal is the best running back, but Luke Staley still maintains the best single season? Did we confirm that, Matt? Is that your opinion?
Well, it's a matter of opinion.
No, it's not. There's the right answer here.
Well, all of this is subjective.
Nope.
So is Jamal Williams the best running back in BYU history?
Yes.
Okay. So did he have the single best season? So I like to stick really close to numbers on this. And so I think you got that 2001 season by Luke Staley is pretty hard to beat.
Here's the thing. Luke Staley's 2001, he averaged 8 yards a carry. He got 1,500 yards in less than 200 carries. He also caught almost 30 balls for like 300 yards. Okay, so I have a hard time giving Jamal a nod on the best season. Now, if Jamal had stayed healthy this year, he might have given him a run for his money. Also, Staley had 24 touchdowns that year. 24.
Yeah, but I think the touchdowns would have been a tough hill to climb, right? But I think a healthy Jamal in 2016 breaks that rushing record.
I agree. Oh, heck yeah.
Southern Utah, UMass, what did he miss? And Boise State? Yeah, I think he breaks it.
Not only does he break it, he breaks it by a lot. right? Yes. We talked about this after like week three or four. We're like, he's going to smash, if he stays healthy, which unfortunately he did not, he's going to smash the record, right? He's just going to absolutely obliterate it. So anyway, so Matt, the thing I think the mark that Jamal will leave more than anything else, though, was his passion and his personality, right? Like the dancing, the BYU Sports Nation commercials. I mean, this is, and he was more flamboyant than BYU players typically are.
Yes, and know? I love the fact that the coaches just let him be.
Yeah.
Just let him be him. You know?
Both staffs.
Yeah. And I know a lot of players do this where they're throwing the ball around with fans and stuff, but I mean, I can't think of another good example of a player where just the fans just became endeared to him in this way, right? I mean, you want to hang out with Jamal.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like people, and it just seems like people just want to be around him.
Yep. I totally agree. I think he will be remembered as one of the best players in BYU history. He'll be a BYU Hall of Famer. And Matt, his legacy doesn't finish here. He's going to get a chance to play on Sundays. So
yes.
Johnny Ashton asks on Facebook, what's your prediction for Jamal's draft pick number? What other Cougars do you think will be drafted or picked up in free agency? I'm going to save the second question. We'll do a whole show on the draft. So we won't get into that today. And we'll certainly talk more about Jamal. But going right now, most of the folks you look at, he's a top five running back, which means the first three rounds of the draft, right?
Yes.
And could he be a first rounder? I don't think so. I don't see that in this year's draft. But could he be a second rounder if somebody really likes him? Sure.
Well, see, here's what it's going to come down to for Jamal, right? I mean, we can sit and you rank him and you say, okay, yeah, top five running back. We'll probably land somewhere in the second, third round. But then you got to line up against what are teams really looking for. And I think you and I were talking about this before the show, before we started recording here, is if you kind of look at the future of the way teams are running their offense in the NFL and you look across the NFL at people's needs, Jamal Williams goes in the second round.
Yes.
I don't know where he goes, but if he's still around at the end of the second round, I'll be surprised. I won't be shocked, but I'll be surprised. He is NFL ready, in my opinion, in a way that very few people show up as ready as he is. I mean, with the size,
he can block.
That's right. He's strong. He runs with some violence. Like you talked about his vision before. Some of these things are, you can't teach somebody when they're coming into the NFL to do these things. You either have it or you don't, and he has it.
Yeah, and I think another big thing will be for them is, you know, he's going to be a guy that doesn't bring in baggage, right?
Right.
And you know, he's a guy that's going to come in, be a good teammate, block well. Which, of course, quarterbacks absolutely love. There's a lot to like. We had Emory Hunt on last year. He told me off. Now, I don't know if he still has this opinion based on another year, but he thought he was one of the best two or three backs, which means potentially you could end up in the first draft if a bunch of teams feel the same way. Of course, Emory Hunt was also the one who told us on our show last year that Dak Prescott was going to be the best quarterback coming out of the draft class. So what does he know?
Yeah, right. Well, I think there's two things you need. If you're Jamal Williams and you're going to go in the first round, there's two components to that. Only one team has to believe that you're that good. But that same team also has to believe that you won't be around.
Correct, right.
If they wait around.
Yes, yes.
So they have to at least believe that somebody else feels the same way about you as they do.
Yeah.
And when those two things come together, when you're Jamal Williams, that's when you come off the board early.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Matt, obviously we are big Jamal Williams fans. We wish him the best in the NFL and thank him for his contributions with the Cougars. It's been great. Well, Matt, in interest of time, we have not even talked about basketball. Okay? So I don't want to analyze that terrible San Diego game, which none of us watched because it wasn't really on television. Are they done? Gary Payne asks and says this on Twitter, when do NIT tickets become available? Are they done? We're done, right? The NCAA tournament dreams are done. San Diego is not one of the teams we said. We said there are a couple teams besides St. Mary's and Gonzaga that you can lose to that will look bad but not terrible. San Diego wasn't one of those teams.
Yeah, I think we all expected a loss to St. Mary's and at least one loss to Gonzaga, right? Maybe two to St. Mary's. And then we even said they would drop a game to one of these other conference opponents that they probably should be able to beat. But we weren't talking about San Diego when we said that. Okay, I mean, this is not a good loss. Now, is it physically impossible for this team to get in the tournament? No, I mean, they could win the conference tournament. They could do that. They could, you know, get one of these other wins against St. Mary's or Gonzaga, or some other crazy, what's the word I'm looking for? Some other crazy circumstance could get them into the big dance. But most likely, this team's headed to the NIT. And you know what? That doesn't really put them far off from where we all agreed they probably were at the beginning of the season. They just started to look a lot better than we were expecting them to. We thought that whatever we want to call them, the big three, Hemerica, the zone leaders, whatever you want to call them.
Look at you go. Breaking out names you can't stand.
Hemerica. I don't think that was ever a pronunciation that he proposed, but sounds like paprika. Anyway, but it looked like they had come a year early. They showed up a year earlier than we were expecting them to. And they didn't, and that's okay.
Well, and we've hammered this for weeks now. The defense is terrible. We just gave up 88 points to San Diego. They're not even a top 200 team. You know, we got torched by Utah Valley. The problem is our offense has to be on every night. And the thing is, that's just not how basketball works. You're going to have road games like this where you only score 75 points and you've got to win that game 75 to 69, right? Not lose it 88 to 75. The thing that just kind of depresses me a little bit about this team is we're wasting potentially one of the greatest individual seasons in BYU history with Mika.
Yeah, and so I when I said a minute ago it's okay, I didn't mean it. Losing isn't okay, and squandering Mika's season isn't okay. I was just saying that, like, I'm not ready to fire Coach Rose.
Oh, no. Let's not be dumb, but
burn all my BYU paraphernalia. But, like, I'm not in that space.
Don't you think he needs to go find a Tom Thibodeau? He's got to go find another coach to come in the offseason who's a defensive specialist and do something, because the roster's not going to change substantially to the point where I feel like they're all of a sudden going to have a bunch of defensive personnel. I mean, we're looking at the big three or the LP3 or America. And those guys are going to be there. Emery and Hawes are never going to be great defensive players. I just don't see it, right?
But they need to be better than they are now.
Yes, but you have to be able to take the team and play better team defense, right? Like, you don't have to. I'm not even asking them to be an elite defensive team. If they can just be an average defensive team, then they can become a way better than average team. You know, just right now, I mean, they give 88 points to San Diego, man.
But you
know
what?
That's not good.
If you could get like a Jackson Emery in there,
that's what I'm saying.
But in my opinion, I mean, you said you know you're talking about they don't need an elite defensive player. Maybe he's arguably the best defender we've ever had.
Yeah, certainly on the perimeter, he's on the short list for sure.
If you can get one guy like that with the rest of this roster,
can become contagious. I mean, too.
You could be looking at Final Four.
You could, but right now,
not this year.
But even as I look forward, Matt, I'm scared about the defense. I'm scared that we will never have a good enough defense, as good as these three players are offensively. that will never have a good enough defense for it to matter in a significant way. Meaning that I think they'll be in the tournament the next 2 years after this one, because I think experience, Haas will get better. I think Emery's starting to show signs of life and those things. But I look at this and I go, and the other part is Gonzaga St. Mary's going to be substantially worse over the next 2 years? I don't see it. So you're, in order to win this conference, I mean, people can make fun of it, how lopsided this conference is, and I agree. I mean, obviously,
with the little tiny gems.
Yeah, with the little tiny gems, and the bottom third of this conference is terrible. And the middle third of this conference might be terrible. But you got two big dogs, and you got to take those guys out. And right now, defensively, we're not good enough to take either of those teams out. A bad night could happen, and I hope they win of those three games left against Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and then potentially four or five if in the conference tournament. They got to win a couple of those for me to feel any differently. Their best hope, and we said this last year about that team, their best hope is to get hot in the conference tournament week and hope Gonzaga slips up against somebody else. Right? That's their biggest hope. But is Gonzaga going to lose a game in conference this year? They torched St. Mary's. They're a potential Final Four team. So anyway. Well, Matt, at this point, if you don't want to know about Rogue One, we did our Rogue One thing, but we're going to close out on a tweet bag question from Andre Hutchins about Rogue One and Star Wars, another question on Star Wars, which we're not going to fully address in this one. So this is what Andre says before we get to Rogue One. He says, it's the same old story with this basketball team ever since BYU became a member of the WCC. Lack of talent is not the problem. I think Andre may be more frustrated with Coach Rose than you and I are, which I don't totally blame him, and he does do hashtag Go Cougs. But here's what he says about Rogue One. Seen Rogue One three times now. Way to go, Andre. I'm impressed. Going to take the nephews for a fourth time in the theaters. That's impressive. And since Matt has accepted his inner nerd, Matt, have you accepted your inner nerd?
Oh, it's no longer an inner nerd.
Yeah, I know. He highly recommends...
The nerd's out of the bag.
He highly recommends the Rogue One Ultimate Visual Guide. It's a must-have if you want to get deeper into this story. I looked at it at the bookstore the other day. I got to get that.
Yeah, I actually picked it up and looked at it in a store a few weeks ago.
So Matt,
if I remember correctly,
again,
I was looking at a lot of Star Wars stuff.
Big time deal here with where is it? Somebody asked us, and I think it might have been on Twitter. Maybe I'll go look there. So again, spoilers on this. Okay, spoilers on Rogue One. So if you don't want to know anything about Rogue One, stop now. All right. You think we're okay? Somebody said, and I can't find it. Somebody said to us, hey guys, I don't think it was that bold to kill off all the characters.
Yeah, I saw that. Who did see that?
I can't find it right now. Maybe Facebook. Maybe I haven't looked in the right place yet. So I'll go look there and try to find the name. I think they misunderstood what we said, honestly. I'm not saying it was a bold choice from a story perspective. I'm saying it was a bold choice because Disney doesn't do that. Right? You can't have sequels. I get it. You can't have these people be main people and then they're not in A New Hope. I think you could have written around that. There are a lot of people that I'm sure were key to the rebellion who weren't in the trilogy. It focused on a very narrow group of people. But Matt, what say you? Do you think we were off on that? Maybe it wasn't that bold?
I think it was bold. It was certainly different. You don't see a lot of movies like that.
Johnny Ashton. That's who said it.
So, I mean, that doesn't happen a ton in movies, especially in this type of a movie.
Yeah, popcorn, action, adventure movies. You don't typically, spoiler warning also for Magnificent Seven. Okay, waiting. I knew most of those guys were going to die, right? It's a Western. They kill off people on Westerns all the time. You don't typically, Star Wars never killed off anybody, really. I mean, Darth Vader dies.
You don't even really see, like, stormtroopers die. In the beginning, when they first started doing them, like, you weren't really sure, like, are those guys dying or are they just stunned?
When I was a kid...
I don't know. Let's just keep going.
When I was a kid, I thought stormtroopers were robots. No joke. They take one shot, they fall down, people just step over them. They must be robots.
Their aim was terrible.
So it was Johnny Ashton on Facebook, actually. I found it. You know, but he's got a good point that it would be weird that none of those characters appear in episodes 4 through 6. I get it. I just think it was bold. I don't think it was bold in his, like, oh my gosh, revolutionary storytelling. It was the obvious way to go for the story. I just think it was bold in that I think a lot of studios would have made the mistake of not doing it so that they could leave the door open to do a Jen Erso sequel. Right? That happens, her and the guy do a spy thing, and they're with the Bothans when they steal it the second time. You know what I mean? Like, I think you could have messed that up pretty easily, and studios do it all the time. Matt, the Jeremy Ashton one, because this is all Ashton's all the time on the podcast, the Jeremy Ashton question, which we are not going to talk about today, but it's an awesome question, and I'm going to save it for off-season. Thoughts on whether Disney will ever reboot Star Wars episodes 1 through 3?
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. That's a great question.
That is an awesome question. And we're going to parking lot that one, as we say in the business world, Jeremy. And we will come back to that during the off season at some point. But I'm putting it on our list of topics to discuss in the off season. That is an awesome question. And if they rebooted it and solved all the problems, I'm not sure I'm totally against that, but I don't know if you need to. But anyway, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. Well, Matt, this has been an episode. I said we were going to stay at 30 minutes, and we're at 50.
Yeah, so, we did not stay inside the 30-minute window.
Yeah, I stayed under an hour.
There we go.
That's small goals, Matt, small goals.
Well, baby steps.
Baby steps, baby steps.
Yeah, We fumbled this time. We fumble a lot more often than Jamal Williams does, who only lost 2 fumbles his entire career.
Yes, and one of them was in the crazy rain in San Diego they don't even have rain in San Diego.
Best BYU running back ever. I already miss him. BYU, just talking about him here when we moved on to the next segment, it made me sad.
I know. It really is sad, and it's nothing against the guys that are coming behind him. Some of whom may be very, very good, and Squally, I think, will be good. It just won't be the same without Jamal.
Yep.
Well, on that depressing note, you can follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RiseAndShout. If you want to email us, you can do it at our email address is riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, the hashtag for this one, if you make it all the way to the end, is what?
Hashtag only 2 lost fumbles. No, you know, focus on the lost fumbles. That's awful.
Terrible. You're terrible at this. You're terrible at the hashtag game.
You're terrible.
Hashtag reboot episodes 1-3.
That is really awful. But we're going to go with it.
Hashtag reboot episodes 1-3. Thanks, everybody. Matt, do you have anything before I close this? I'm sorry.
I wanted to make sure that we at least address the fact that Jamal Williams only gave up 2 fumbles his entire career.
Yeah, I know.
Because that blows my mind.
That is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Especially when you think about how good he was at finishing runs after contact, right? Because that's when fumbles, even good running backs who don't fumble a lot will fumble, right? They're being held by the legs. They're trying to move, and now a guy gets a free shot at the ball, right? I want to miss you, Jamal. Well, thanks.
You remember that one time he took that hit when he got hurt and he like bent and he like scrunched him up all weird?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't lose a fumble.
Didn't drop the ball. That was the other amazing one when Rodgers got sacked on Sunday. Like, didn't see the blitz coming on his blind side, and he's holding the football with one hand, and he didn't drop it.
Well, and I know sometimes that's luck too, right? Like, oh, you could put the ball on the turf, and if another guy's right there to pick it up, you know what I mean? That's helpful. But only losing two.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's amazing. And he didn't drop it very often either. I mean,
no, it rarely came out, Jamal.
Only five times.
We'll miss you. We'll miss you. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Next week we will be back on Tuesday as well. We'll talk hoops and other stuff, probably, is my guess, just off the top of my head. But thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!